Okay, why don't we get started? It is 12:05. We are recording. I'll call the meeting to order. This is David Corus, Board Chair, and I will take roll call in no particular order. Here in the room, we have John Johnson.
Here.
Grant Westerson.
Here.
Paul Hinch.
Here.
Dave Barillo.
Here.
Paul Whitescarver.
Here.
And Mayor Passarello.
Here.
And online, I see Tom Patton.
Here.
And new board member designee from the Department of Economic and Community Development. I'll introduce Deputy Commissioner Rob Podolay.
Here. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you for being here. I will go through other board members, but I don't believe others are present as of yet. John Carter. Tom Gill. Brian Thompson. Chuck Roman. Doug Delana. And Mayor Elker. Okay, with nine present, we have a quorum. We'll move on to the next item, which is approval of minutes of both or of several meetings, the June 20th, 2023 regular meeting, the July 18th special meeting, and the September 19th special meeting. I will take motions on them one at a time, so that if there's any comments, questions, or necessary abstentions, folks can do it on the individual minutes. So first, I will entertain a motion on the regular meeting minutes from June 20th, 2023.
I'll make that motion.
Moved by Grant. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Paul. Any comments or requested changes? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Any abstentions?
I do. I wasn't present.
Yeah, abstention by Dave, abstention by Mayor. Okay, next I'll entertain a motion on the special meeting minutes from Tuesday, July 18th.
So moved
by Grant. Is there a second?
Second
by Paul Hinch. Any comments, discussion, or requested changes? Okay, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions?
I'll abstain. I wasn't there.
Yeah.
I'll abstain as well. I wasn't there.
Okay. Abstain by, I'll take Rob as an abstention from all, abstain by Paul, and abstain by Mayor Passero. And then finally, special board meeting minutes from Tuesday, September 19th. Is there a motion by Grant? Second by John. Any comments or requested changes? Okay, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, abstentions.
I'll abstain.
Abstention, but from Dave, abstention from Tom, abstention from Rob.
Yep.
And Mayor. Yep. Thank you. Okay, next item on the agenda is public comment. Any members of the public wish to speak at this time? We'll start in the room. Any members of the public present in the room wish to speak at this time?
Yeah, Kevin Blacker, I'd like to speak.
Yep, go right ahead.
So I guess I'll start by saying that it's nice that we're finally meeting in person again. I think that it's good to have to, you know, face each other as board members and, you know, for people to have to face other people when they're criticizing them, be in the same room, be able to see each other. It's harder to ignore. And so I guess I want to say that to start. Next, I want to point out that we're meeting here in the, I believe, the Eastern, you know, Connecticut Chamber of Commerce. And I believe that it's still Tony Sheridan's, you know, organization. And just point out so that everybody remembers and knows the significance of, there's been discussion about the airport authority usurping the port authority, as that relates to the port authority's inability to function and do its job. there have been repeated failures, inability to keep your word on timeline, on budget, inability to maintain staffing, even basic staffing, still operating with an interim executive director. So I just hope that's not lost, that that detail is not lost on anybody, that here we are meeting, you know, at Tony Sheridan's place, and there's been this discussion of basically rolling the Port Authority into the Airport Authority. I want to point out and just ask, John Johnson has been identified as having an ethics conflict and continues to serve. And this just goes on and on and on. There have been repeated ethics violations resulting in fines. There is ongoing federal and state attorney general investigations. And I just wonder how everybody can sit in this room and allow John Johnson not ask or not say you were identified as having a conflict, and you know, how do you continue to act and vote? So I wanted to point that out. Wanted to also you know, bring up that the state of New York rejected giving these additional funds to the offshore wind projects. One of them is Sunrise. Orsted CEO is identified as saying that the viability of Sunrise is in question. It's apt to be canceled, similar to Revolution Wind, similar to what happened down at Vineyard. So what's the plan with this specialized wind port? And you guys can try and change the narrative and try and say that this isn't a port, you know, specially designed for offshore wind, but there needs to be some discussion of the problems that the offshore wind industry is having in your purpose-built port. You can say nobody could foresee the Ukraine war, nobody could foresee inflation, nobody could foresee COVID. Good judgment builds a good plan that is flexible enough, and you guys just don't use good judgment. That is evidenced by you know, basically all of your past and all of your history. I'm not going to sit here and listen to the rest of the meeting. I'm going to listen from the phone because I'm on my lunch break. But I want to, you know, just continue to chip away at you guys, because I think this is a very weak organization.
Great. Thank you. Any other members of the public present here wish to speak? Yes.
I am Sally Cruz, and I am... For 2 years now, I've been the executive director of the New Haven Port Authority, as much as one to stand up and introduce myself.
Thank
Some
you
of you know me, time. Many of you don't.
Appreciate it. Any members of the public on the phone wish to speak at this time, you can take yourself off mute, announce your name, and give public comment. Any members of the public wish to speak at this time? Okay, moving on to the next item on our agenda, the executive director's update. Ulysses, I'll hand it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just would like to say that I cannot describe to you how grateful and happy I am that we were all able to finally meet in person since the pandemic. This is something that I have longed for ever since I joined the organization. This is not only the first meeting in person of the board, but it is also the first regular meeting of our new full-time staff. And so I would like to ask the board to give a warm, warm welcome to our new finance director, Fayola Haynes, and our office manager, Jill Dowling Moreno. You guys please stand. Yes. We are also assisted today by our technical assistant, Steve Noon, who's basically the one who's been helping us figure out how we're going to have these meetings in person from a technical standpoint. But also joining us virtually is someone who joined us just a month and a half ago, And she is now the construction manager. She's joining us virtually. She's the construction manager who's on site at the State Pier and on loan from the Department of Transportation. Her name is Kathy Levante. So she's on board as well. I'd like to also join Chairman Corus and thanking Tony Sheridan and the Chamber for their warm welcome and accommodations. Their staff here has been just tremendous to work with. And also would like to welcome Sally Cruz, the Executive Director of the Port Authority for New Haven. When it comes to the recruitment and the interviewing process, and the processes for bringing on board our office manager, I was assisted by the chair of the Human Resources Committee, Brian Thompson, as well as board member Dave Perillo. Thank you so much, Dave and Brian, for your assistance in that process. But also assisting me in the recruitment and hiring of the finance director. For the chair, we had the chair of the Audit, Compliance, and Governance Committee, Tom Patton, and the office executive financial manager, Tim Tennyson from OPM. So thank you also, Brian, for your assistance. I mean, Tom, for your assistance. I really appreciate it. We are also recruiting right now a maritime business development manager. The closing date for that position was yesterday. And once again, I get the esteemed pleasure of working with Brian Thompson and Jay Perillo. Throughout all of the hiring processes, we have also had the good fortune and good counsel of the Director of Human Resources at Connecticut Innovation. So they've been assisting us as well. On October 11th, Chairman Curtis and I had a very constructive and informative meeting with the leadership of the Transportation Committee, where we agreed that our emphasis going forward will be on the maritime economic development of our small harbors, as well as our deep water ports. With respect to financial management, that is underway right now under the able direction of FAOLA. I would like to highlight just a couple of points. Number one, the Office of Fiscal Analysis report for the fiscal period ended June 30, 2023, was approved by the board and submitted on September the 19th. Additionally, the OFA report for the period ended September 30, 2023, was reviewed by the Finance Committee this morning and is on the agenda today for your consideration. Number two, in accordance with CPA's Operating Procedures and Procurement Manual, the audit firm of Cohn Resnick was selected as the independent auditor for fiscal year ended June 30, 2023. This audit is currently in process and in progress right now, which consists and assisting us in that is our part-time fiscal assistant, Lori Epler, as well as our finance director. They are currently engaged in providing just volumes of data, documents, financial information to the independent auditor. We have also been advised by the state auditors of public accounts that commencement of the audit for fiscal years 2022 and 2023 is now imminent, which means our 1.5 employee staff in the finance office will once again be responding to two audits simultaneously. Number three, with your approval today, our finance director will be the ethics liaison and compliance officer for the CPA, responsible for training, education, and policy compliance. When it comes to our office's submission of reports and procurement activities, we submitted the July 1 and the October 1, 2023 quarterly reports to the Transportation Committee, as well as the quarterly personnel status report to the Office of Fiscal Analysis for the period ended June 30, 2023. On the procurement front, Now that the procurement of an independent auditor has been achieved, we are now this week and this month, we're commencing also the procurement, if you will, of legal services. When it comes to the New Haven Navigation Improvement Project, as you are well aware, the CPA has a design phase agreement with the Army Corps of Engineers regarding the New Haven Harbor Improvement Project. There was a meeting that was held by the New Haven Harbor Strategic Partner meeting on September the 8th. The items discussed at that meeting specific to design component included surveys that are being conducted this fall and winter regarding the entrance channel and beneficial use sites. Also, geological analyses and borings are being scheduled due to the delay now in the RFP process. This now is being scheduled for the winter. It was going to occur this fall, but because of some delays with respect to the RFP process, that now is going to take place just a little later. But ship simulation with our Connecticut pilots, that was scheduled and took place in August with the Corps at the Corps facility in Vicksburg, Virginia. A draft simulation report is due by mid-October, and the final report is due by the end of December. When it comes to project coordination, that continues with cross-town cable to assist cable realignment. However, the regulatory division of the Corps recently has requested that the cable work plan from cross-town cable be completed by November the 20th so that the Corps can really proceed with its design. Construction is due to take place and begin in October of 2025. Now, when it comes to also the work at with respect to Pier 7 at State Pier Project, GZA, which is the environmental company that has been hired, they are responsible for permitting coordination with the state and federal entities, as well as plans and specifications for bidding. A core regulatory manager, however, has now submitted questions regarding the justification for the docking of the Navy's amphibious transport dock class vessel at the pier, as well as any increase in traffic that vessel might create. And they have actually asked GZA to respond by October the 20th. As a matter of fact, we're going to be having a meeting with them to make sure that they meet this deadline. We'll be meeting with them this week to make sure they meet their deadline by October 20th. When it comes to ship round three, in April, the Bond Commission approved 9 small harbor improvement projects. We have distributed the grant agreements to awarded municipalities for execution. The grants are administered, as you well know now, on a reimbursement basis when the projects are completed. Our new maritime business development manager, we hope, of course, that person will assist the executive director in the expansion of assistance to municipalities with respect to our small harbor. The statewide dredge study is finally picking up a little steam. On September the 29th, the Corps issued a project management plan, a draft project management plan, which is organized in 4 major deliverables. Number 1, dredge needs inventory. Number 2, dredge material placement sites inventory. Number 3, a prioritization of dredge material placement sites. And number 4, investigations of the priority placement sites. Brian Thompson of Deep Connecticut Deep and I will be meeting with the planning team of the Corps later this month to see how we can also advance the completion of the draft project management plan. The Connecticut Pilot Commission also has a recommendation before the committee today, but before I mention that, I would like to also indicate that on September the 12th, the Pilot Commission approved and recommended a New London Harbor extension of route for one of our licensed Connecticut pilots. But also today, The Pilot Commission has a recommendation before the committee regarding the adoption of written procedures regarding use of mobile telephones, texting, and email while engaging in piloting. And more of that, I will speak more on that later on in the agenda. But one of the other areas that, you know, I really get a great deal of enjoyment out of, and that is the education, outreach opportunities, and briefings we've been able to provide to our citizens all across the state and this region. On October the 4th, you probably read somewhere that the governor also toured the operations at the Port of New London, and he also conducted a on-site press conference where he announced the first multi-state agreement in the nation with Massachusetts and Rhode Island to jointly seek offshore wind proposals. Attending that event, I also had an opportunity to be briefed and to tour our facility. We had the pleasure of having the Commissioner of Connecticut's Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, the Chief Manufacturing Officer for the state, our own Mayor of New London, as well, CEO of Eversource, Northeastern Head of Government Affairs for Orsted, the Executive Director of Sector, also known as Paul Weisgarber, the CPA Board Chair, and our local legislators, just to name a few, and that were in attendance. Since June, however, we have conducted a significant number of briefings and tours. And you have a list there, which includes the NAACP, City of New London officials, the state legislators, CPA board members, also visitors from Ireland. So we've been busy. Coming up, though, we will be providing, and we're now scheduling, if you will, briefings for the Transportation Committee at their request, the Town of Groton's Economic Development Team at their request, also K through 12 students and others. So they will be coming through and getting a briefing before all of the subsurface work that's taking place at the pier actually has concluded. On September 6th, I'd like to point out, and he's here today, I'm glad he's here, but Marlon Peterson and I, and Marlon Peterson, who is our construction administrator for AECOM, we provided Craig Smith of the day, who is here today, an extensive on-site briefing and tour. Out of that, and I hope we have an opportunity to see at the end, the video that he produced as a result of that tour, which also educates our public very well about the many uses of the pier and the progress that's taking place with respect to the pier. On September the 22nd, Environmental Business Council of New England held its fourth annual Connecticut Offshore Wind Conference, which included a presentation entitled "The State Pier is Here." In September, also, the Business Focus magazine, their 113th issue, published a comprehensive, in-depth article about the Connecticut Port Authority, and it was entitled "First Among Its Peers." All of these outreach initiatives have been just opportunities for educating the citizenry and creating a healthier public relations posture as we transition from construction to state pier to maritime operations and infrastructure improvements of our state's small harbors and deep water ports. Later on in the agenda, I plan to also provide the board with an update of the construction project at State Pier. But at this point in time, I'd like to turn it back over to the chair of the board.
Can I ask a few questions?
Sure.
So Pier 7, Fort Trumbull, mentioned LPE. I'm pretty sure it was just there for safe harbor operations.
Yes, it is. This was safe harbor.
I'm not sure why they're asking about traffic.
That's right. But they asked that question as well. They asked about traffic, and they wanted to know also under what circumstances was this actually being recommended? So GZA is now having to respond, if you will, to those two questions. But you're absolutely right. It was kind of curious as to why they're taking that particular angle here. And at this point in time, as a matter of fact.
Plus, it's one of the largest ships we can bring in, so it kind of meets Mayor Passero's request for Carnival Cruise Line, whatever could come in too. The larger the Navy ship, the more structural support you'll have for the pier. That was the whole idea.
That's right.
And I think we, during my tenure on the base, we wanted to make sure it was available for such things.
Right.
So kind of interested. If you could keep me in the loop in that.
We'll definitely keep you in the loop. We're having a meeting this week with them just to make sure they also answer the question and to find out from the core, what's the basis really too of some of their inquiries in this regard. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if this discussion has got to you, but it's been under discussion for years as far as that pier goes. So we've lost the opportunity to bring in the large ocean liners now, which we were bringing into the state pier. And the idea was to just include dolphins, rather than bringing the liner in and laying it against the pier to set it up like they do in the Caribbean with dolphins, which would also seem to be economical too.
Right.
So it can lay perpendicular to the pier.
Right.
So I think that was one of the part of it. Yeah, I got a call from the base to talk about this. Mm-hmm. And if you go north-south, I think there's more dredging that you have to do south to put the dolphins north-south to the pier and perpendicular. Might drive up the cost. I'm just pointing that out. That might be one of the things that there's an issue with.
Right.
So,
but I'll be in touch with you really regarding this discussion. So this is imminent. Yes.
Well, it's a good thing.
Yes, they finally get
here needs to be used.
Yes, but we're finally getting some attention too.
Mm-hmm.
This was lying dormant for a long while.
Yeah. Right. How long were the Tritons?
570 feet.
So that's quite a bit shorter than an ocean liner.
Not much.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But they would have had to turn those to get them out of there.
Yep.
That's the last improvement that was made to Pier 7, so that was in the '80s.
Okay.
And the other thing I would add too during the press conference, it was brought up about the MOU between the three states, but it was also to promote the offshore wind strategy.
Yes.
And one of the things that I think is important about that, when you look at the MOU that was signed, was that when you're looking at these power purchase agreements and you're starting to go across state lines and you develop and one of the things was the Connecticut Wind Collaborative so that we can actually expand collaboration between the states. I think that's key.
Absolutely.
All right. Any other questions or comments? All right. Thank you. Next time on the agenda is Finance Committee update, and I'll just note that board member Doug DeLena has joined. We had a Finance Committee meeting this morning at 10 o'clock. We went through all of the monthly financials. I won't go into them in detail other than to say, the finances remain in a very good position. There were some minor adjustments to last year's, closeout, though in keeping with what we had discussed publicly with a modest deficit, more than offset by this year's projected surplus. Before I go into the specific items on which we have motions, if there's anything that any member of the board wants to ask or comment on related to the monthly financials, I'd be happy to entertain that first. Okay, so we had two items coming out of committee that will require board action. First, I will point you to a standalone sheet in your packet, which is a resolution related to a budget modification. As was described to the committee by Viola, the adjustments represent a couple different things. The first line here you see is an increase to the audit line item of $45,000 to fund it commensurate with the selected proposal that came out of the audit committee and was acted on by this board previously. The next line you see there is a increase of the contractual services, communication, outreach, and sponsorship line by 50,000. This is a suggested additional budget item, which will partially fund workforce training and development for the local members of the local ILA chapter. We've been in discussions with Gateway around training to build skills necessary for the increased and new activities at the pier. Gateway has made a commensurate commitment to that, which is proposed for us of $50,000. It's not the totality of the likely training, but I think it's a responsibility of ours to the historic workforce at the pier, and one that we will have further discussions around as it evolves. But this would enable a an initial near-term training on the SPMTs for a core group of the local ILA. Then you have a shifting essentially of 40,000 from general contractual services to 50,000 of consultant professional services. And this funds our short-term use of temps through Robert Half for the first few months of the fiscal year, which are now permanent positions. And it also includes a conversion fee, which was necessary because our prime candidate for the finance director position was the individual who we had been using temporarily through Robert Half. And as is customary for those agreements like this one, which we used through the state contract, there is a conversion fee when converting that temporary employee into a permanent one. And I think we're very lucky to have been given the opportunity to do so. So you'll see with the decrease and the three increases, that is a net budgetary impact of $105,000, which would reduce our projected surplus at the end of this year from $919,616,000 to $814,616. Still a very healthy projected surplus given the scale of our annual budget. So I'll read the resolution, entertain a motion and second, and we can have some discussion. Resolved in accordance with Section 4 of the Authority's operating procedures, in order to prevent any line item of the Authority's annual operating budget from containing or being projected to contain deficit, the Board hereby accepts the following modifications to the fiscal year 2024 budget as recommended by the Finance Committee at its October 17th, 2023 regular meeting. Account 51100, Contractual Services Audit, an increase from $35,000 to $80,000. 51300, Contractual Services Communication Outreach Sponsorship, an increase from $50,000 to $100,000. 51400, Contractual Services General, a decrease from $50,000 to $10,000. And 51403, Contractual Services Consultant Professional Services, an increase from $30,000 to $80,000. For a net budgetary impact of an additional appropriation, I guess, essentially of $105,000. Is there a motion to approve those four transfers?
So moved.
Moved by John. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Second by Grant. Any questions, comments, or discussion?
Yeah. What was the conversion fee?
$17,000. We discussed at our earlier meeting. Yep.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments, or discussion? Okay, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstention? Okay, additionally, at the Finance Committee meeting, we recommended for approval by the board the quarterly report to the Office of Fiscal Analysis for the quarter ending September 30th. I will walk through it ever so briefly. You'll recall this quarterly report summarizes the status of each of our funds. The first category there is our general fund. We started with just over 1.5 million. We received 21,000. We spent 242,000. And so we have a cash balance of 1.3 million, which is unencumbered and unreserved. Our DOT core fund, this one looks a little bit odd. We have expended 155,000 because that is where we pay payroll out of. We have not yet received any of our DOT allocations, so the fund remains zero. You'll recall the way that fund works, we get $400,000 from DOT, we spend payroll against that. That fund always has a deficit because our payroll is in excess of $400,000 every year. And at the end of each fiscal year, we make a transfer from our general fund to make up that deficit. And as the fiscal year progresses, we'll keep everyone in the loop of that projected amount that will be drawn from our general fund. And finally, our core bond projects started the quarter at 48, didn't receive anything this quarter. Encumbered $2.8 million with various activities related to ship and other projects that Ulysses reported on, expended $30 million, which I'll come back to in a second, for a balance of $15.8 million. That expenditure of $30 million is not really a true expenditure. It's a transfer of funds from our core account where they go after bond commission allocation. You'll recall we received $30 million from bond commission at their June 30th meeting, which was deposited into our account at that time. And then it was shifted from our core bond account held by the state to our Webster account, which is the escrow governed account from the project. So that same $30 million you'll see down in our state pier project as having been received, quote unquote, by the project, but having expended, quote unquote, as it left our core account. And then finally, the New London project. This quarter, there was an additional $53,750 million. That was the $30 million we received from the state at the June Bond Commission meeting, as well as the $23.75 we received from the partners. Encumbered non-construction costs this period of $5.5 million, encumbered construction costs of $47 million, for a total encumbrance of nearly 53 million. But the important numbers, I think, there for your all information and for the state's information is the right column, which is the total from the initiation of the project through the end of the quarter, a total receipt from both state and private funds of 311 million, a total encumbrance of soft costs of 35 million, hard costs of 272.8, for a total encumbrance of 308 with just over 3 million funds remaining. And so this was recommended for approval by the Finance Committee. I'll read a resolution and then entertain a motion and second, and then we can have discussion from anyone who is not on the Finance Committee or anyone from the Finance Committee who has further questions. Resolved that the Board of Directors authorizes submission of the Q1 quarterly financial report to the Office of Fiscal Analysis as required by section 1-123 subsection B of the Connecticut General Statutes, as recommended by the Finance Committee at its meeting held on October 17th, 2023, in the form attached as exhibit to agenda item 5B. Motion to approve.
So moved.
Moved by John, is there a second?
I'll second that.
Second by Grant. Any comments, questions, or discussion? I think as we progress, these are going to become increasingly familiar looking and hopefully a relatively pro forma submission. I appreciate everything Fayol has done to get it to where it is today. I think it's finally at a point where it's pretty straightforward and relatively easy to wrap your head around. Any final questions or comments before I take the vote? Okay. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, moving on to the next item, New Haven Port Authority property purchase, Ulysses.
Okay, this next item has to do with the transfer of funds from the CPA to the New Haven Port Authority for the purchase of surplus Department of Transportation properties in the Port of New Haven. And I will provide a brief overview of the background on this. I will basically give you what really the highlights of that background, which includes that the state of Connecticut, through the Connecticut Department of Transportation, acquired several parcels in the Port District of New Haven in connection with the Quinnipiac River Crossing Project. Several of these parcels have been now determined and were determined for several years ago to be surplus Connecticut DOT properties. In July of 2018, the State Bond Commission approved a grant of $751,000 for the CPA to purchase these surplus properties. In August of 2018, the CPA Board of Directors passed a resolution authorizing said purchase. However, the CPA subsequently decided that the surplus properties would be better positioned for the maritime sector by them being purchased by the New Haven Port Authority rather than by the CPA. And New Haven Port Authority also determined that it was in its best interest as well in acquiring the surplus properties. Because this transfer of surplus properties is not occurring between two departments, it was determined that it would be, it would need, really have to have a conveyance bill by the legislature in order for this to take place. That conveyance bill was enacted June 29 of 2023 by the legislature. On June 30 of this year, the Bond Commission approved a request to reallocate the funds previously allocated to the CPA to a grant and aid to the New Haven Port Authority for the purchase of the DOT surplus properties for maritime related uses. The surplus properties include the original four properties that CPA indicated an interest in acquiring, plus one additional small parcel that was included in the special act that was passed by the legislature. In an offer letter dated August 1 of this year, the Connecticut DOT stated that the purchase price for the four original property parcels plus an additional small parcel that was included in the act would be $697,500. Based on the average of two appraisals of each parcel plus an additional $1,000 for an administrative fee. The New Haven Port Authority has determined that it wishes to purchase the surplus parcels and the small additional piece for the price set forth in that letter. Therefore, today we are asking and requesting the board's approval for the executive director and the board chair to be in a position to, with your approval, to transfer $697,500 that's held by the CPA to the New Haven Port Authority for the purchase of DOT surplus properties as described in the special act number 23-26. This has been reviewed and approved by council at DOT, by the New Haven Port Authority Council, as well as CPA Council as well.
Thank you. This is, I'm gonna have to read this resolution. It's a long one, so bear with me. And then I'll entertain a motion, second, and discussion. Resolution of the Board of Directors of the Connecticut Port Authority authorizing the Connecticut Port Authority to release funds to New Haven Port Authority for the purchase by the New Haven Port Authority of certain New Haven properties from the Connecticut Department of Transportation. Whereas the state of Connecticut is the owner of certain properties located within the port area of the city of New Haven, here and after referred to as the properties, which properties are located to the south of I-95 on the east side of New Haven Harbor, and are more fully described in sections 2, A, B, C, and D of Special Act 23-26. Whereas at a meeting held on August 1st, 2018, the Connecticut Port Authority, here and after referred to as CPA, Board of Directors unanimously resolved to purchase the properties. Whereas on July 25th, 2018, the Connecticut State Bond Commission, here and after referred to as Bond Commission, approved a grant of $751,000 for CPA to purchase the properties. Whereas the state of Connecticut is also the owner of an additional property in the port area of New Haven known as Parcel B and described more fully in Section 2, Subsection E of Special Act 23-26. Whereas Bond Commission on June 30th, 2023 authorized $751,000 in grant funds for the purchase of the properties in Parcel B to be transferred from the CPA to the New Haven Port Authority. Whereas the CPA has determined that the properties would be better positioned for the maritime sector by being purchased by the NHPA rather than by the CPA, whereas the Connecticut General Assembly enacted Special Act Number 23-26, directing the Connecticut Commissioner of Department of Transportation, here and after referred to as DOT, to convey the NHPA, the properties, and parcel B for the cost equal to the average of two appraisals obtained by the Commissioner of DOT, plus the administrative cost of the conveyance. Whereas Special Act 23-26, an act conveying parcels of state land to the New Haven Port Authority, was approved June 29, 2023. Whereas August 1st, 2023, DOT sent the NHPA a letter indicating purchase price for the properties at Parcel B to be $697,500 based on the sum of the averages of two appraisals for each property plus administrative costs. Now, therefore, be it resolved that despite the prior approval pursuant to the 8-1-18 Board of Directors meeting to purchase the properties, the executive director being hereby is authorized to take such actions as necessary, such that the properties are not purchased by the CPA and CPA is no longer authorized to purchase the properties. Be it further resolved, CPA pursuant to PA 239 shall transfer grant funds received by the state in the amount of $697,500 to the NHPA, whereby said grant funds are to be used by the NHPA to purchase the properties in Parcel B. Be it further resolved, the executive director being hereby is authorized for and on behalf of the CPA to transfer the sum of $695,500 to the NHPA to be used for the purchase of the properties in Parcel B by NHPA to execute, deliver all instruments and such documents, take any and other reasonable actions in furtherance thereof. Be it further resolved that Chairman of the CPA Board of Directors, the Executive Director being hereby are each authorized on behalf of the CPA to execute all instruments, documents, take any and all other reasonable actions in furtherance thereof. Of the above, adopted by a regular meeting of the Connecticut Port Authority Board's directors on October 17th, by the subsequent vote. I don't think I need to read that part.
So moved.
Moved by Grant, second.
Second.
Second by Doug. Thank you. Any questions, comments, or discussion?
Curiosity, what is the New Haven Port Authority going to use these four parcels for?
Sure. Sally?
Sure. We're going to lease them for port maritime operations. They're not directly on the water. They're between a block or two blocks back. So mostly for laydown and storage by terminal operators in port.
Dave?
Yeah, I have a question. I think Maggie is best to answer this. You know, this is something that's been going on for years and years, and I'm glad we're finally concluding this. What was the resolution of any environmental issues with those properties? I know that was a hot topic three or four years.
Yes, we had phase two assessments done, sort of a business risk phase two environmental assessment. And I think one of our, I think we're going to phase through doing the remediations. We haven't actually discussed that great detail yet, but we have determined what the risk is. And it is basically very similar to the risks on the property that we already have, because those are adjacent properties and it's sort of a court-wide historic contamination proceeding.
Do you now have full control over your property on Waterfront Street that has been used as a what did they call it? They were doing contaminated waste.
No, they are keeping part of that, but we are getting another part of it. And in fact, a little extra piece was we're getting something, and there was a little piece on the corner that would still belong to them. And I said, well, why don't you give me that too? And so that's where this little,
So Parcel B is contiguous to the portion of your parcel that DOT is removing from the waste storage area.
Correct. It is contiguous and sort of, from their point of view, out on the outside.
Right. So, from where they'll retain.
Right. They are retaining that. I understand why they'd like to keep it. I also understand why my constituents would like them out of there.
They tend not to give up waste storage areas near 95.
Was that New Haven Port Authority property that they've taken?
They took New Haven Port Authority property, and we're getting that back. It is not subject to this discussion because it was in a separate conveyance bill, and it is actually an entirely separate purchase for a couple $100,000, except for that little corner I spoke of, which is the additional parcel B.
Yeah, I was referring to the New Haven Port Authority property that DOT, did they take it by eminent domain?
They did.
Well,
they took it from this, yeah. They took it.
And that you're getting back?
We're getting that back.
In its entirety? Or not?
We're getting everything that they took from us back. However, a large portion of their waste storage facility, they did not take from us. They took from, I believe, the New Haven terminal. They took it from private terminal operators.
Okay.
So that that is not part of our discussion today. And I don't know that I know any way to get it back, at least not at the time of this discussion. So,
while not our discussion today, we would like to have a future, if not the next board meeting in New Haven, and have some aerials and some discussion to make sure that the board is up to speed on the various terminals and their operation and your properties. I think it is the appropriate time for that briefing and then Bridgeport. Okay. Any other comments or discussion?
Chairman Corus, I do have a couple of questions. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Is that Rob? Sorry.
Yep, this is me.
Yeah. Go right ahead.
So a couple of questions. So we mentioned the use of four parcels, and I'm sorry, I'm new. I'm just coming into this on behalf of Alexandria. Just a couple of questions. So how many acres are these four parcels?
The largest is about an acre and a half, and the smallest is about 0.1 acres.
Well, one of them, if I recall correctly, one of them is a legit parcel. The rest are maybe two of them.
Are legit parcels.
And two of them are
very small. Slivers. But they are near where Port Partners already have operations. So, you know, they might be just across the side street, and that would make it pretty convenient.
Okay. How near to the water is this? Like within half a mile, quarter of a mile, a full mile?
A quarter mile.
Quarter mile?
Okay. Yeah.
A couple other quick questions. Earlier you mentioned basically it sounds like it's CNI, commercial industrial use for storage and warehousing by terminal operators. I was just wondering, what is the consideration for mixed use development? The only reason I'm asking that is from the DECD's perspective. I've been in numerous conversations up and down the state for both national and statewide trends on waterfront recapture for commercialization reasons. So, you know, people want to see the waterfront used for mixed use generally. I understand that there's a CNI contingent in New Haven. So I was just wondering, what is the consideration by the city of New Haven for that mixed use development?
So the New Haven Port Authority's mandate is to support the maritime industry and thereby improving taxes and creating jobs. So our focus thus far is on strictly maritime related usages. And we have been meeting with the city economic development group, department really. So they're aware of what we're planning to do.
One thing to add for consideration is that earlier they were mentioning Carnival, but the tourist cruise, if you dredge it enough, and if that's an expectation of bringing from a tourism perspective, again, tourism's under the DECD, as we may know. If there is a consideration for dredging enough to bring in a cruise ship, that would be an economic driver, and it's also maritime, and it would also be correlated to mixed-use development, just for consideration. I'll move on to my last questions. What was the development estimate in time in terms of getting return on the taxpayer dollars for this? So when it gets to the NHPA, how soon will you be able to get a productive use in terms of tax dollars out of these parcels?
We have more than one person who's already interested.
our current thinking is that we're going to put out a request for proposal so that we determine the best use, and it's very transparent as well. We want to do it transparently. But when I say we determine the best use, I'm sure it'll have to be maritime related, but in terms of what is the market value of these properties.
Okay. One final question then. Is there a published business plan in terms of transitioning these properties so that there is a time? Is it 18 months? Is it 5 years? Is it 10 years where we're going to get a return on this from an NHPA perspective?
There is not a published business plan, but I don't think any of us, I don't think any of us have thought about it taking 18 months after we get custody care control of the properties. I think, you know, we'll start moving them into productive use as soon as we can, and that would be hopefully earlier than 18 months.
I'm just giving various time scales, right? I'm just trying to determine a magnitude of order. So that's all. So, all right. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I have no further questions.
Thanks, Rob. Any other questions or comments?
Yeah.
I think you looked at a map for what this thing looks like and these little pieces of property. They're already being used by somebody as lay down area. So,
yeah, we didn't have the map because.
Yeah,
we had the maps in 2018 when we were talking about them for our own purposes. We will circulate to the board those maps just for your own information, but you will see the constraints. Tom?
Yeah, I don't fully understand what this transfer of grant funds means. Is it actually was the right to obtain these funds in the future? But it's not cash, right?
So there was bond commission action in 2018, which allocated state funds to the Port Authority for the purpose of acquiring these from DOT. It sounds a little wild because it's all within the state, but because of the way the DOT acquired them through eminent domain with federal funds as part of, I think as part of the Quinnipiac Bridge project, they have to get reimbursed, and I think they actually send that money back to the feds. Long story short, so we actually have the money, and that money is restricted in that the only thing we can use that money for is for the purchase of these properties. And so the legislature passed the special act at the end of the session to allow for the transfer of those properties from DOT to the New Haven Port Authority. And then the bond commission modified the language around those funds, which were transferred to us, to enable us to grant them to the Port Authority, to the New Haven Port Authority.
So it's part of our restricted cash on our balance. All right. Correct. And then what about the difference between the 751 and the whatever 697 53,000, what happens to that?
I think we have to give it back to the state, because the only thing that money was allowed to be used for was for these properties.
Okay, thank you.
And Fail just corrected me. You will see it in our finance documentations, but it's in our core balance, not in our account balance. It's one of the core projects.
That's funny. I looked at the core projects and none of them lined up.
You know why?
Is that the 70011? It's pretty close.
Correct, because we spent some of that on environmental, on phase one EISs back in 2019, as part of our projected purchase.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, Greg.
No, I thought it might have represented depreciation of the property, but it's money that we spent looking at it
in a short period of time. Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. Next item on the agenda is a pilot commission update, and Ulysses, I'm going to hand it over to you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to also draw the attention of the board to the well-reasoned and research background of the pilot commission's recommendation that they submitted regarding electronic devices, the use of electronic devices while engaged in piloting a vessel. In Connecticut, the Port Authority is empowered to license and discipline pilots. Pursuant to Connecticut General Statute 15-15A, the regulations of the Department of Transportation pertaining to pilotage were adopted by the Port Authority as its written procedures, effective July 1, 2016, and the Port Authority retains authority to adopt and implement new written procedures as it relates to the safety of pilots and piloting. At its September 23rd meeting, the Pilot Commission voted unanimously to recommend to the Port Authority that the internal policy set out by Interport pilots be adopted and implemented as a written procedure by the Port Authority. Like the policy and procedure issued by the New York Board and Commission advisory issued by the New Jersey Commission, the electronics advisory issued by Interport pilots limits communication by cellular telephone, text, or email to navigational, operational, maritime safety, national security, or other professional purposes. The electronics advisory requires that any permitted communications, whether voice, text, or email, be kept to a minimum in both quantity and duration, and prohibits the use of these devices for purposes unrelated to pilotage. If the board adopts as a written procedure of the CPA, I would suggest that the second paragraph of the policy that is presented by the Interport pilots, that it would read as follows. It is the policy of the Connecticut Port Authority that while providing pilotage services, all licensed pilots and registered apprentices shall. And then it would go on to adopt the language that has been suggested by the Interport Pilots Association. So that's the sum and substance, Mr. Chairman, of the background here.
So we need to make a resolution. I just want to make sure that I'm saying the right thing here. So we are resolving to amend. What exactly are we amending? We're amending
only the electronics advisory policy that was submitted by Interport Pilots Association.
We're adopting.
We're adopting and
the electronics advisory as a component of the, I just want to make sure I get the right word here, as a component of the pilot commission policies and procedures.
As it relates to mobile telephone, cellular devices.
Right. Yes. What is the document, though, that this is getting appended to?
Well, there is no document that is getting appended to.
It's a standalone.
This is a standalone because we only have one, maybe, I think only one other policy that we have approved by the board that has been recommended from the pilot commission.
Okay. So the resolution then is to adopt the electronics advisory as recommended by the pilot commission as a policy of the CPA governing the actions of the pilots.
That's it.
Okay.
All right. So moved
by Mayor. Thank you.
Second
by Graham. Any comments, questions, or discussion?
Is that what's reflected in this interpilot?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It's 23-4.
That's it.
Okay.
Yes.
So I got to ask the question. So great. It's kind of weak for me. However,
you know, is there something that the pilots have to sign and say that they acknowledge this policy?
Well, that's something that we as a CPA would have to, no doubt, have to
create. Yeah, we hold all of their training records and certification records.
That is right.
So is there...
So this would be part of what they would have to adhere to, sign, because they have to also renew their license on an annual basis.
Right.
So on an annual basis, this would be part of the renewal, along with any other policies that we would pass. They would also have to, we would advise them. And there is some language here in terms of if you don't adhere.
Yeah. Is there, sorry,
go ahead.
I guess, is there already stuff that they're signing for now?
I don't know. Do you know that?
No, yeah, because no.
Yeah.
We have the regulations that came over from DOT,
yes,
and they're now, I think, working rules.
They are.
Correct. They're no longer regulations.
That's right. They are looking
And the licensed pilots have to follow all regulations or working rules. So they're not signing off on everything. And they're rather expensive,
mm-hmm.
you know, so, the working rules.
So, Deborah, then are we adopting this as a component of the working rules?
I would say
yes. That's absolutely. Yeah. Okay. I just want to make clear that we're saying that it goes in the right place
mm-hmm.
where it has the greatest effect. How you enforce it is a whole other story, but
okay. Is the CPA we held accountable for the enforcement of this as
yes.
the certifying officials?
Yes.
We have no enforcement ability.
We license them, right?
Yeah, we license them, but we have no enforcement ability. This was in the DOT, and the DOT had enforcement ability. And if this was in DEEP, they would have.
Right.
So, yes, we want to enforce these, but I don't know how.
So I think the pilot commission has routine meetings that the CPA, is there some way of looking at their minutes to make sure that they at least discuss this?
Oh,
Ulysses.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And
all of this came. Yeah. This all came from the pilot commission. It's the most extensive
yes
report I've seen on something that probably could have been covered in one page.
I've seen a lot more extensive stuff than that.
We're talking about not using a cell phone unless it's an emergency.
Yeah, so does District Ash ever come to these meetings? Because I'd love to talk to them about PPUs and their use on merchant vessels. Because when you read the report, it just, you know, there's a 3-minute gap where the PPU was being used for something else, and that was the only navigational tool that they were using. So it, you know, kind of begs the question, you know, we're talking about electronic.
Well, let's come to a pilot commission meeting. We have them every month.
Sure, I'd love to.
Okay.
Okay. I'll make sure you have the invite.
Having done a couple of these investigations on my own,
right?
It seems kind of odd.
Okay.
Any other comments or discussion? Okay, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. Next item on the agenda is State Pier Project Update. Let's see.
Well, there's a great deal of activity taking place at the pier right now. We are transitioning from construction to operation. We have turned over 74% of the acreage to our port and terminal operator, Gateway. Also, with respect to those operations, Orsted, Eversource, our partners are now in the process of actually marshaling the components. We have workers now actually working on these components. They are raising now towers. They're getting ready for loadout. We have about 36 tower sections on the pier right now, along with 24 blades, 8 nacelles. It's the operation is underway. And from a construction standpoint, we also This past weekend on October 7th, another key portion of the project achieved substantial completion, which has now enabled us to actually turn over the bulk of the acreage to Gateway. We have about 25% of that acreage that we're using right now for a construction corridor to finish three areas that I reported on in our last meeting. And those three areas are the South Wall, the State Pier. The State Pier will be finished, I believe, this month. We'll be done with State Pier. And also the Toll Wall. So the Toll Wall, which is a foundation wall underneath the pier. So the heavy lift capacity of those two piers will be completed. And the construction will also be completed by, we're on that target now for the construction to be completed by the end of the year. The last item will be the dredging that will take place and scheduled now to take place in December. So that is, in a nutshell, the report. But to give you a more detailed technical explanation of what's taking place from a construction standpoint is Marlon Peterson. And Marlon, are you on? He is our construction administrator.
I am on. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, very good. Good afternoon, board. And as noted by Executive Director Hammond, significant construction-related progress has and is continuing for the past several months. In addition to advancing construction at the State Pier, the Tow Wall, and the South Wall, as the director noted, the contractors continue to coordinate with the concurrent terminal operations. This coordination requires both upland or on-site, as well as vessel access. It includes a common secured perimeter that separates the 6 day per week construction activity from the 7 day per week terminal operations. For those that have visited or otherwise seen the site, construction activities are primarily located along or around the outer perimeter, with a concentration along the eastern edge of the State Pier and the southern edge of what previously was known as the State and CVRR piers. Terminal operations are using the northeast bulkhead, which from other meetings, you may know that we re-termed that the delivery berth, and also throughout the upland areas, including the created central wharf. Along the State Pier heavy lift platform, concrete deck pours 4 and 5 were successfully placed during the months of August and September, which have now enabled the installation of the dense graded aggregate, or the DGA, as you may recall, in early October. That DGA provides the final wearing surface. Equipment installation, including critical concrete platforms where we raise the equipment out of the flood zone, along with fenders and bollards, are in progress. At the same time, along the State Pier Tow Wall, rock socket installation continues with the 27th and final rock socket expected to be targeted for completion in mid-November. Concurrent with our rock socket installation, deep obstructions are expected to be removed or mitigated, as we've discussed in previous meetings, via auger or drill as the contractor moves in the north to south orientation. Those obstruction removals are targeted for completion also in late November or early December. And as again mentioned by the director, dredging will follow the completion of the rock sockets, the obstruction removals, and driving of the remaining tow wall pipe piles and sheet piles. Very quickly at the south wall, a very exciting achievement. We have finished drilling of the remaining 42-inch diameter combi wall pipe and sheet piles. We completed that in late September. The contractor is currently driving the final pipe and sheets to the required tip elevation, with completion of pile driving targeted for the last week of October. Once the piles are installed, the balance of the south wall works will include placement of the concrete plugs, installation of the concrete cap, placement of the remaining central wharf anchor wall, connection of the tie rods between the cap and the wall, installation of our last outfall, number 4, we will then tie into the CVR West return and then backfill the balance of the central wharf with the stockpiled material that you see on site, place the DGA, and again, complete the final wearing surface. Through the end of September, the value of work completed is $257 million, or 93% complete. As noted again by the director, the overall infrastructure improvements project is scheduled for completion at the end of this calendar year. We do anticipate that resolution of punch list items, completion of as-built drawings, warranties, and other related closeout activities, as well as the demobilization of the contractor's offices, plants, and equipment will continue into early 2024. To send the update, our construction update for the month of October. Thank you.
Right, thanks, Marlon. Questions or comments from any members of the board about either operations from Ørsted, Eversource, and Siemens Gamesa, or remaining construction activities?
We're not anticipating any additional costs, right?
We are not. Everything, you know, there might be some little things here and there, but all the main scopes of work, the three big ones, you know, state pier, toe wall, and south wall are progressing as hoped, as of our most, you know, recent reorganization at the end, you know, middle of the summer.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you're going to start to see some sort of, you know, the pace of change, the visible change is going to get quicker and quicker, right? State pier relieving platform is done. All the drilling at the south wall is done. Mm-hmm. And so now it's just driving and closing it up. That's all going to look pretty finished.
Yeah.
Within a month or so. They're going to still be working at the toe wall. There'll still be some dredging, but the visible signs of activity will be pretty minimal as we approach the end of the year.
Chairman Corris, I do have a question for Executive Director Ulises. So according to the website, and by the way, awesome. It's great that we finally have this asset. A lot of folks are super excited. I'm focused on marketing. And what is the marketing plan? On the website, it states when not supporting offshore wind staging and assembly operations, the terminal will be marketed to other commercial customers for maximum heavy lift cargo utilization. What is that plan, and when can we expect to receive it from the executive director? Thank you.
Okay. Part of that plan is the hiring of a maritime business development manager. We do not have that asset within our own office right now. The closing date for that was yesterday. We are in the process now of looking at those resumes, but that's part of our plan. The other part, because we as a CPA, we're going to also be responsible too, with respect to some of that marketing as well of our asset. Number two, the other part of that is going to be Gateway. Gateway, who is our terminal operator, will also have an incentive and does have an incentive to market the asset as well. We are have engaged them to do such, because whenever this particular facility is not being used, let's say for right now, for offshore wind, and there will be gaps when it's not going to be used for offshore wind, we now have two platforms. 5,000 pounds per square foot in terms of capacity, and we're the only port right now with two platforms at 5,000 pounds per square foot in terms of load capacity. That gives us an edge in terms of marketing when it comes to heavy lift cargo from around the world. And so there is an incentive for Gateway to do that and for the CPA. Third, our developer, Ørsted, also has an incentive also to help us in terms of marketing with respect to additional developers. So we have a three-pronged kind of plan, if you will, for marketing this asset. And we can't wait to really get started and move from construction and transition, if you will, now into marketing from a maritime economic development, the asset.
Thank you, Executive Director. Thanks, Chairman Corris.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll just add that as of right now, there is no gap projected prior to 2026. That certainly could change if the prospects for individual projects change. But there is baked into the Harbor Development Agreement, you know, a timeline between Ørsted Eversource slash NEO and Gateway about, you know, how much runway Gateway needs to effectively fill those gaps. And so we do expect, you know, there's ongoing conversation between those parties to make sure that Gateway is empowered to play the role that they're, you know, that they're required to play on our behalf by being kept aware by NEO of when the gaps will occur in the future. But as of right now, we're still a few years out. Any other questions or comments? Great. Moving on to the next item, Connecticut Port Authority Ethics Liaison. So folks who've been on the board, public who's been watching, will certainly no doubt remember that we consistently have an ethics liaison. It changes with staffing in time, but we're hopeful that this will be a longstanding a designation. I'll read the resolution, entertain a motion and second, and then any discussion. Resolved that Fail Haynes hereby appointed to serve as Ethics Compliance Officer of the Connecticut Port Authority, hereinafter referred to as the Authority, pursuant to Section 1-101RR, Subsection A of the General Statutes of Connecticut, in order to coordinate and monitor the development and implementation of and compliance with ethics policies and training programs for the Authority, and as liaison for the authority of the Office of State Ethics pursuant to 1-101RR subsection B of the Connecticut General Statutes in order to coordinate the development of ethics policies for the authority. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Grant, is there a second?
Second.
Second by John. Any comments, questions, or discussion? Okay, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, finally, last item on the agenda is the board and committee assignments. So we have three standing committees, finance, audit, compliance, and governance, and HR, of which every board member is on, is meant to be on at least one. With some changes over the last year or so, we have some board members who are not currently on committees. We have some committees that have vacancies, and so I'm going to read out committee assignments, although these are really probably just for the remainder of the calendar year, because come January, you know, that's when we kind of revisit these types of things. So if you don't like a committee that you're on, or you'd rather be on another one, or any number of reasons, by the end of the year, if you're not happy with your committee assignments, just let me know. But for the remainder of the calendar year, the following will be the committee assignments, read in no particular order. Finance Committee will be Paul Hinch, John Johnson. I'm on it. I'm on all the committees, so I'm not going to read my name. But as the chair, I'm on all the committees. Doug Galena, Tom Patton, Paul Weitzcarver, and Mayor Passero slash Felix Reyes. Members of the Audit, Compliance, and Governance Committee will be Chuck Roman, Paul Hinch, Doug Galena, Tom Patton, John Carter, and Paul Weitzcarver. And members of the HR Committee will be Rob Hodling, Brian Thompson, Dave Perillo, Grant Westerson, Felix Reyes, and Tom Gill. We will circulate that so you all will have the information. Finance Committee meets monthly. The other two committees have two regularly scheduled meetings a year, but occasionally have special meetings. But again, if folks want to make a change by the end of the year, don't hesitate to let me know, and we'll reestablish them in January. But that'll carry us through to the end of the year where everyone has at least one committee assignment. Any comments or questions on that? Any old business that anyone would like to re-engage on? Any new business anyone would like to propose taking up?
Ulysses, I meant to make a comment on Pier 7.
Yes.
There might be a potential of Pier 7 to be a docking facility for some tall ships.
in 2026, there is going to be a celebration for 250th anniversary of the United States. And there is a possibility that we may be asked to be a port of call. It hasn't happened yet, but it may. Right now, the position is we don't really have any facility for it. But I wonder if in your discussions that you could mention, that pier is what, 700 feet long?
700, yes.
You know, it would certainly take a small fleet of ships, so you could hold 4, 5, 6 ships. Right? So it may be if you're trying to justify the use or the existence of that pier, that's one possibility.
Okay.
That's good. Didn't we use both of them in 2000.
What about 2000?
Well, I think we used both of those piers down there.
We did. That's correct.
That's all right.
So, I just can't imagine why somebody's questioning the reason for having it, you know, with the Navy, you know, working there regularly.
Right.
But, you know, if you need some more additional uses,
okay,
a good place for Tom to.
Okay. I'll follow with you as well.
Any other new business? Okay, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Moved by Grant, second by John. Meeting is adjourned at 1:31 p.m. Thank you, everyone, for joining in person and participating remotely.